This is Courage to Resist. Dr. Stephen Zunis is a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he chairs the program in Middle Eastern Studies. He serves as a senior policy analyst for the Foreign Policy and Focus Project of the Institute for Policy Studies, as an associate editor of Peace Review, and chair of the Academic Advisory Committee for the International Center on Nonviolent Conflict. Professor Zunis is the author of scores of articles for scholarly and general readership on Middle Eastern politics, U.S. foreign policy, international terrorism, nuclear nonproliferation, strategic nonviolent action, and human rights. Most recently, with former Afghan diplomat Kushal Arsal, he co-authored the article The U.S. and Afghan Tragedy. Courage to Resist is speaking with Dr. Zunis in an effort to shed some light on what many in the U.S. are calling the good war in Afghanistan. I'd like to thank you, Dr. Zunis, for speaking with Courage to Resist today.
My pleasure.
Now, we're hearing a lot these days about the war in Afghanistan being the so-called good war, as opposed to the war in Iraq. What's your response to that?
I think one can make a case that many of the stated goals of the U.S. policy in Afghanistan would constitute a just cause, but I think it's important to distinguish between a just cause and a just war. Ridding Afghanistan of extremists like Taliban that had caused so much suffering is legitimate, and of course preventing Afghanistan becoming a sanctuary for groups like Al-Qaeda, which clearly have demonstrated their ability to attack America, is a just cause as well. But unfortunately, the war has not only has raised some serious moral and legal questions, but it has not helped resolve that situation. Indeed, what we've seen in recent years is it has made matters worse. Part of the problem is that there has been a gross overemphasis on the military side of the equation, that the really important issues about sustainable economic development, of cleaning up corruption, of creating a truly inclusive and representative Afghan government, free of the domination by warlords, many of whom have as much blood on their hands as some Taliban leaders. These have been overlooked in the prosecution of the war effort.
In his books about the Taliban and the chaotic situation in Central Asia, Ahmed Rashid talks about how after the first war against the Taliban, the U.S. basically abandoned the country in terms of helping them develop educational institutions, a healthcare system, any kinds of infrastructure.
Very, very much so. There didn't seem to be much interest in really enabling the Afghans to develop the kind of sustainable institutions. I mean, every Afghan government historically that has been at all successful has been one that has been able to bring at least some semblance of security and economic development to the country. And the government the U.S. is nominally backing clearly has failed to do this. The real important thing is, of course, is to build these self-sustaining institutions. Instead, the war has been a kind of reactive thing. And what's been particularly disturbing, and this is even from Afghans who believe the United States should have some kind of ongoing presence, at least until things stabilize, is this overemphasis on air power. Which has, you bring in these fire bombers and bomb villages, and you may end up killing some Taliban fighters, but you also end up killing a large number of innocent civilians. And this is a tribal society where one is duty-bound. If somebody, kills a family member, and remember these are large extended families in most cases, people feel obliged to take up arms to go after the people that kill their family member. I mean, we are creating extremists faster than we can kill them.
Now, just today, I saw a story about truckloads of bodies and body parts that were being hauled to the local governor's office in order to prove what devastation and havoc the U.S. air raids are wreaking on Afghan civilians.
Yeah, it's been pretty bad, no question about it. And again, even putting aside the moral issues and the laws of war and that kind of thing, this is creating more and more anger at the United States and the Afghans that support the United States. So much of what we call the Taliban is, you do have those really way out there Islamist extremists, the misogynists, the people with ties to Al-Qaeda. I mean, those types are definitely there, but the growing majority of what we call the Taliban are just ordinary Afghans who have taken up arms to fight what they see as a foreign occupier, just as they took up arms against the Soviets in the 1980s and their ancestors did against the British in the 19th century.
Well, you know, I can't believe the people in the State Department and the Pentagon are all fools, that they couldn't have predicted these consequences to their policies and actions, or if they did predict it, that they can certainly see what's happening now right in front of their eyes. So for me, it calls into question the reasons. You talked about just reasons we might be in Afghanistan. It calls into question those reasons. Are those the real reasons? Why are we really there?
Part of the problem is I don't think we have a really cohesive policy. I mean, I think that they're really... I think the initial thing after 9/11 was largely a matter of catharsis, you know, that we felt we had to do something, and making war, you know, seemed to be almost a more emotive response. And at this point, we're hearing more and more just talks about maintaining America's credibility, which of course was the line that kept us in Vietnam, you know, for a good, you know, 5 or 6 years after the consensus was, even within the Pentagon, that the war was unwinnable. And I think they're really, and of course they're those who are in different parts of the government, the military, who probably have their own ideas and goals. But we really haven't spelled things out more explicitly. I mean, to the Obama administration's credit, they seem to be taking a somewhat more broader and nuanced view, and they're, you know, giving the situation the greater attention. But I still have not heard a real cohesive explanation about why we are still there and what the goals are.
Talk about petrochemicals and pipelines in Central Asia and what that might have to do with it.
I think that, you know, there are some who may see an interest there, but to be honest, I don't think that is the primary reason, given the cost and risk of getting involved. And also, I think there's a recognition that the United States is having a hard enough time just preventing extremists from taking over huge parts of the country and parts of Pakistan as well, to have any realistic goal of keeping a pipeline secure. So I'm rather dubious that is an overarching reason. I think the more I look at U.S. policy in the greater Middle East, the less I'm prone to conspiracy theories and economic determinism, and more I am to this kind of rigid ideological mindset that and this hubris that makes people think that the United States can control things through force of arms. I think Iraq, for example, was less about oil in the short term as it was oil in the long term. That is, having a broader, in a geostrategic sense, that in that we could control the tap, if you will, for the entire, you know, Persian Gulf and greater Middle East region from countries who could be economic or political rivals, you know, like Japan and China, the Europeans or whatever. And I think perhaps control of Afghanistan could be very much part of that larger hegemonic goal, you know, the part of the kind of an extension of the great game of the 19th century. So in that sense, I think there is a broader geostrategic interest, not in the short term as in a pipeline or whatever, but certainly in the in the longer term. And I think that's really short-sighted. I mean, for one thing, it dismisses many of the most basic principles of 20th century international law. I mean, it's literally reactionary foreign policy going back to the 19th century, but it's also one that's clearly unworkable, because one thing history has shown is that people of that part of the world, particularly Afghanistan, don't want to be part of anybody's hegemonic vision.
In your article with Kushal Arsala, you give an overview of recent history in Afghanistan. Can you talk about what role the U.S. has played in actually creating the chaotic mess we've gotten ourselves into over there?
Well, this idea that Soviets and their communist allies controlled Afghanistan, that supporting some of the most hardline Islamists would somehow be to our advantage, because they would be less likely to compromise, that they would be better able to mobilize and indoctrinate the population. In a sense, we could bleed the Soviets dry. But, of course, in the process, we empower these groups by working with the Saudis to support the system of madrasas, of these Islamist schools that taught a particularly reactionary and dangerous interpretation of Islam, and basically drag the war out in such a way and marginalize some of the more moderate nationalists, so that the Islamists were able to fill in a vacuum. The Taliban came to power in part because the coalition of Mujahideen forces, which came to power after the communist government was thrown out, could not hold together, because the radical faction favored by the United States, Hakmakhtiar, essentially kept the war going, the factionalized fighting going, and Hakmakhtiar now is allied with the Taliban, and the Taliban, as crazy as it may have been, at least brought stability and order to the countryside, unlike the coalition that initially came to power. All this is just a long way of saying that this policy of supporting one faction against another without regard of what that faction is like is something that gets people into trouble. And this is exactly what we're doing now. We are supporting some nasty warlords and ethnic militia leaders and opium magnates and others, simply because they're anti-Taliban or anti-Al-Qaeda, and that may work in the short term, but in the longer term, as we're beginning to see already, it ends up undermining our efforts and actually makes the instability worse.
Well, those of us in the anti-war movement would just like to say, get out of there. What do you think about that?
I think it's probably better than what we're doing right now, given the choice. I'd like to see something in between, personally. I would like to see the United States as part of an international effort, not U.S.-led necessarily, but part of a truly international effort, try to create a kind of sustainable economic development in the countryside, so people will have something that's worth preserving and fighting for. Get a government, clean up the government, make it more accountable and transparent. Clean up the corruption, and try to really make it so that people will not be tempted to embrace extremists like the Taliban and Al Qaeda. I mean, most Afghans are not predisposed to that kind of fanatical ideology, but if it's a choice between the Taliban and a corrupt government and what they see as foreign occupiers and a war that's largely against civilians, they will tend to drift towards some of these rather scary extremist factions. So I would like to see the United States engage, but as do most Afghans I know. But these same Afghans say this idea of increasing America's military presence and continuing the kind of tactics which include these this over reliance on on air power and alliances with corrupt warlords isn't doing anybody any good. That it really makes the situation all the more worse, and in fact increases the odds that the Taliban, other extremists, will continue to gain influence.
Well, one of the questions always is, can an empire act in any way other than how an empire acts? But what you're advocating is a kind of combination peacekeeping and nation-building role, it sounds like.
Yeah, so again, I would emphasize, as part of a genuine international effort that has the active participation of Afghans themselves. And I'm not talking just about the warlords and self-appointed faction leaders, but the Afghan people themselves, because there is a, despite all that the country suffered, there is some semblance of civil society in that country that I think we need to be more akin to, and that the military role by the United States should at most be helping to train an Afghan force that can protect itself against the extremists. I really am having I'm not a strict pacifist. I believe that some kind of military action in certain situations may be reasonable, but I really at this point I'm having a very hard time with any confidence seeing either a moral or strategic justification for continuing to prosecute the war the way we've been doing.
Well, Professor Zunis, thank you so much for your thoughtful comments. We really appreciate it. You've provided much to think about for our listeners, including the U.S. soldiers who come to our website. So thanks for giving us your time today.
My pleasure.